Hello and welcome, fellow awesomeologists to Awesomeology. I'm Sue.
And I'm Ben, and in this episode, we'll talk honestly about how our book project is going and discuss some strategies we could be using to move us ahead.
Honestly.
Emphasis on the honestly.
Yes. I mean, that is at least what a thing people can expect from us every time. It's probably the only thing they can expect every time.
Is honesty.
Right. All of the rest of it, consistency, creativity. Yeah.
Right. That's all
logic.
Questionable at best.
Comes and goes.
Yeah. I like it. Well, let's dive in, huh?
Let's talk honestly.
Some of the barriers we're experiencing, maybe how we're planning to move past them. And I'll kick it off and I'll just say something that is super obvious but is honest.
Thank you.
Is just the simple task of taking time, making time, right? Like booking the time or being open to when you're inspired and then stopping whatever you're doing and leaning into the inspiration and writing something or planning something, because it's not all just writing paragraph long form content. There's a bit of planning and outlining and stuff that we have done, but sometimes that can come at a moment of inspiration and doesn't have to happen where you're completely shifting your mind to do that. But that's, again, maybe an obvious one, but it's a real one, right?
Yeah. I don't know if it's obvious. Because I think maybe the mythos I built around actually writing a book is that we would be so on fire with ideas and desire to get it done and everything that we would be virtually unstoppable. Mm-hmm. I think that was probably too optimistic, knowing that everything else still exists.
Right.
Yeah. But yeah, I don't know if that is obvious to people. Yeah. That finding it's not finding the time. There is no time.
Yeah.
Because we are going to fill our time no matter what.
Right.
And we have plenty to do that. So it is, like you said, more making the time, setting the time aside.
Right. Yeah. Well, a nice segue into what might even make that challenging, because I have gone as far as making the time, setting the time aside, booking it in my calendar, but then the thing that I'm doing up until that appointment in my calendar is in a completely different mindset, on a completely different topic, in a completely different space, and to go from 11:59 a.m. to 12 o'clock p.m. does not automatically create this magical shift in my brain where it's like, let's friggin' write a book now, you know? So, and you know, that's a challenge that we talk about in our work often, you know, where you're shifting from, you know, one task to the other, administrative task to creative, or sometimes even like creative task to creative task, but they're two different kinds of creatives and, you know, like writing to designing or, you know, whatever, the list goes on and on, recording a podcast to graphic design, you know, like these are shifts. They might both be in this big space of creativity or creative work, but it takes a shift of the brain to do that, do it well, do it creatively. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Your brain can't set things down the way your hands can.
Yeah.
Right.
Right.
And that's definitely the thing I struggle with. If I go from doing a physical task to a creative task, there is that feeling of like, I can literally set this thing down, put it at enough of a distance away from me that I can pretend that I have shifted my mindset. But you can't really, you can pretend that you can stop thinking about something else.
Yeah.
But you can't set it down.
Yeah. Stop thinking about or like literally doing the something else.
Right.
The analogy is popping in my head of a carpenter working on a miter saw or a chop saw trying to cut something in half while simultaneously drilling in something over here.
Yeah.
You could do both of those things simultaneously.
you
might even be able to like do one and then quickly shift to the next, but likely something's going to suffer.
Yeah.
At the very least, quality.
Right.
Maybe the most obvious, the integrity of your phalanges, right? So, like, yeah, It doesn't work in the physical space. Why would it work in the mental, you know?
Right. So last night, let me tell you a story. Last night, it's related. Trust me. Last night I was making freezer jam.
Sweet.
I know.
Literally sweet.
Literally.
Yeah.
And in the process of freezer jam, you have to stir it, according to the internet, for 3 minutes, right? And I am standing at my kitchen counter with the dishes from the freezer jam in the sink in front of me, the freezer jam next to me on the counter that needs to be stirred for 3 minutes. And I did find myself saying, why are you wasting this time when you are stirring with your left hand? You could be doing dishes with your right hand.
Oh, this is awesome.
To give you, just to give you context for how I treat myself.
Yeah.
Yeah. And 100% that is a thing I did. I stirred with my left hand.
Yeah.
And I washed dishes with my right hand.
That's and a very neither wax one on, of, wax off situation.
Neither one of them were good. Yeah. It was both bad. None of it is good. But so I, yes. I understand your analogy. Yeah. I lived your analogy.
And just last night.
Just last night.
Cool.
And I did get freezer jam.
Well.
As a result of it.
Okay.
And questionably clean dishes.
Yeah.
Right. Dishes that I can say I have washed. Right. Whether they're clean.
Yeah.
Whole other thing. But.
Jury's out. We'll find out soon.
Yeah, just don't tell anybody. Yeah. Nobody in my family listens to this. So they're never going to know. No, it's all fine.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
who complains about freezer jam anyway? So.
Right.
Nobody in their right mind. The other barrier that was on my radar coming into the recording today was collaboration, which, you know, is simultaneously a barrier and maybe an advantage that we have doing this, right? Like, we certainly can kind of like split the work. We've got two brains behind this thing, brain and a half. I won't give myself too much credit.
three quarters of
yeah,
a brain.
Right.
Who knows?
Right. So, you know, as much as that's a good thing, and I think we'll put a, you know, it'll bring a unique aspect of creativity to the finished product and everything. You know, just the fact that I need to be mindful of what you're working on. I need to like not maybe get too far ahead, or I can feel at times like I'm dragging us behind. Like, you know, all of these things also can be a challenge or create at the very least like a mental hurdle, like you know, should I do this thing? Do I need to run this past Sue? Do we need to have agreement on this thing before we start writing? You know, whatever. So yeah, and that's something that we're gonna deal with throughout this whole process, you know, both the good and the bad in the collaboration. So
yeah. Interesting, because a thing that I was thinking about was I am unaccustomed to needing to collaborate when I write.
Yeah.
I am accustomed to, in the nicest way possible, just being left alone to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so the idea, I have had to stop myself and say, you can't just go ahead with every idea you have necessarily, but also go ahead with the idea, because maybe that ends up with a better product, because you do the thing that you, that is burning you up inside. And then you bring it to your creative partner and they say, oh, I see why that was burning you up inside, but let's change this or do this differently, or let me add that to that thing. And it just makes it better.
Right. Yeah.
But
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm very hopeful and have no reason to anticipate anything other than the working together, meaning we get something better out, you know, after the fact. And it's interesting to think about what the finished product will wind up being and how much we might be able to tell, or maybe more importantly, how much like the reader at the end will be able to tell, like who wrote what, or, and I imagine this will be relatively undetectable, like how each of us change our style because we, you know, have this partner in this thing, you know, like. If you were just writing without having to worry about how I might influence it or what feedback I would be giving, I imagine your style would be, it would be more you, you know, it would be like all you, you know, because who the hell cares what Ben thinks, you know, but other way around.
To be fair, I think that I know a lot of the time. You know,
boy, have I come to terms with that.
Yeah. I do not.
I know. But yeah, you know, it'll, and that's something that I think I'll kind of, I don't know, I'll do my best to be aware of throughout, like, how much am I modifying the way I'm saying this or the way I'm writing this so that I think it'll make Sue happy.
Right.
And really, I mean, I do care about how happy you are and what, how satisfied you might be with my contributions to this thing. But really, at the end of the day, it's not about you. It's about if the end reader, you know, the end right. user gets value out of it too. So, yeah. Don't really know where I'm going with that or what point I'm making other than it just being
I can
another
see that you're
challenge.
Looking for it, though, and yeah. I like that.
Yeah, I'm looking so hard.
Yeah, you know, and for me, the whole reason we were discussing this on the podcast is we started from this conversation
yeah.
of, number one, how do you write a book? number two, why is it so damn hard?
Yeah.
And I don't even, I definitely... I'm backing down because you're in the room and I said, definitely. And I was about to say for sure. And now I'm backing even further down. I think there's a real possibility. This is not the hardest part at all.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, but I do have faith that once we get into it and to be clear, I feel like I'm into it
yeah.
to some degree, but I think there is still, especially because it's a collaboration, that feeling of, are we both into it? Mm-hmm. Or is it moving? Are all four wheels turning on this vehicle?
Yeah.
Or am I spinning it in circles because my two wheels, which are on one side,
mm-hmm.
are moving and yours aren't?
Right. Yeah. Well, hopefully what we find at the end, and again, I have no reason to be anything other than hopeful about it, is, you know, when your wheels stop spinning, mine are spinning, and there's just this constant feeling of forward momentum, you know, right. even if it does go a little zigzaggy
yeah.
throughout, you know, but, and I think what we should probably tell ourselves right now and remind ourselves throughout is, at the times where both of our wheels are moving forward at relatively the same pace, like that's going to feel great, you know, because mm-hmm. we're going to get big chunks of stuff done and, you know, it's going to be, yeah, there'll be I think some really natural opportunities to feel a lot of progress really quickly
yeah.
because we're synced up or whatever, you know.
How do you think, I love thinking about that future, but
yeah.
so how do you think those moments when everything is, you know, we're working in sync and things are, we're getting big chunks of that done. How will that affect positively other things in our work? Do you think that there is a boost there that we will feel where it will, instead of taking away from work, because it'll be time away from work,
yeah.
it will sort of supercharge some things. That's my prediction.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That will feel a little, I don't know, infallible. Maybe infallible isn't the right word, but like, you know.
I think, well, my guess is that some version of that happens already or is already happening. It's just maybe being so like consciously aware of how we're doing it as part of this book writing process might kind of like open our minds to or put our radar up to other times that it's happening. Like, oh yeah. Like this is similar to that or whatever, you mm-hmm. know? So, but I think that stuff happens already. It's just maybe because our noses are down and we're working, we're not talking about it. We maybe take the moment. We don't take the moment to recognize it, celebrate it.
Yeah.
Whatever. I do feel like there are times, you know, now that I'm kind of prompted to think about it, there are times that as a team, I feel like we've got these moments where all of a sudden during the week, during the day, whatever, you can kind of like look around and be like, holy smokes, like we're freaking cranking right now. Mm-hmm. You know, like people are getting stuff done. And I guess one thing that maybe causes that moment for us to actually like see it is in our project management software, where all of a sudden you see a whole bunch of green checkboxes, right?
Right.
Or we get our weekly recap of how much we've all gotten done and stuff. You know, there's a measurable there, right? Like we know this many tasks were completed, but or seeing like our pipeline of work kind of shifting from one end of the process to mm-hmm. the other. So yeah, that's probably something that we should spend a bit more time celebrating. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. This is definitely a conversation we've had without having without finding a solution to it yet.
Yeah.
Or the best solution to mm-hmm. it. I think we do some of these things. We at least take the opportunity as things are moving, or you know, if we're in a meeting and say we're done with this, right?
Yeah,
we can move that to done, right?
Right.
I do think that's a moment of celebration.
Yeah,
because you can feel, especially some of those projects that
linger.
Yeah, maybe have faced barrier after barrier and been out there. I think when you see those go away,
yeah,
the whole feeling in the room shifts.
Mm-hmm, for sure.
So, yeah, those are good moments.
Yeah.
And maybe we need to inject something else in there.
Yeah. Confetti cannon. I'm thinking confetti cannons.
I was exactly thinking confetti.
Fog machine, lasers. We'll figure
balloons.
It out.
We'll do the whole
thing.
We'll
report back. Don't worry, listen.
Yeah. Lasers. Okay. We don't have enough lasers at all in our work, and that's
a problem.
That's gonna come. Are we doing stay views again this year? I'm bringing that up on my stay view. Not enough
more
laser lights. So any other barriers that we want to talk about? We don't want to dump on ourselves.
Yeah. No, I'm feeling good about the ones we've acknowledged. Is there anything else on your mind?
Yeah. Oh. Like the whole thing, like how do you write a book is still on my mind. But a thing that I have thought a lot about, I don't know if this qualifies as a barrier really, but a thing that I've thought a lot about, and I think I know this will surprise you, but I think I'm overthinking it. And I could tell you're shocked.
I'm already shocked.
That I would be overthinking something. But the build up that we gave ourselves to what this thing could be and how valuable mm-hmm. it could be, even if it's just one person who finds it valuable, there's a small part of that that has given me pause. Hmm. Where there's a little part in my brain that's like, no, you better, now you have to deliver that. Mm. That level of usefulness. Don't phone this in. Do you know? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I don't think I phone too many things in. So I don't know why that is.
Yeah.
So prominent in my mind, but it is. It's a thing.
Yeah.
In there.
Yeah. Well, good for you to acknowledge it. And at the same time, not only are you overthinking this, you're definitely not giving yourself enough credit as an expert and a professional. Because I do think if Sue Campbell wrote a short story or a blog post or a text message that shared any knowledge that you have about your career and what you've done, someone will benefit from that. So I think those are like the lowest stakes in this whole mm-hmm. thing. In my opinion, someone will benefit from what we have to share, for sure. That's easy.
Okay.
Do I want it to be as big of a group of people as possible and for them to find it as valuable as it could be? For sure. And I'd love to crush that. So yeah, I'm with you. Like, I don't want to phone it in or anything, but I think we got to give ourselves some credit too for the fact that we've been doing this for a while. We know some stuff. So let's share it.
Yeah. That, you know, that's a good point. That is the thing that a thing I think about is that I have to remind myself that there is a good chunk, not all, but a good chunk of this that is just in my brain.
Yeah.
And, you know, that was sort of the whole thought at the beginning of why we thought we could do this is because we have the knowledge.
Yeah. Right.
And we can, and the gaps that we need to fill in, we can fill in.
Exactly.
But, yeah, you know, it's that classic sort of imposter syndrome.
Totally.
Of, yeah. And also, I want to pose a new theory for marketers, which is if you're a marketer and you don't think you're full of crap sometimes, then you need to do some introspection.
You are a narcissist.
You need to at least ask yourself, are you full of crap?
Right.
Because, and I don't think it's just marketers either.
Yeah,
but,
right.
But I think a lot of other industries, you keep that secret full of crapness inside your brain.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, okay. So let's talk about how you write a book. Another discussion that we had is my whole concern. Boy, you know, I should just get therapy and stop making you be the one that has to listen to this. Last time it was my delusions of grandeur, and now it's now it's this. But I know that if I went back to my high school writing teacher, shout out Joan Johannes, who, and this is true, was featured in Can't Fancy magazine.
Oh, nice.
I know.
Meow.
she would be very disappointed that I have not considered planning everything out. Hmm. I have not considered outlining each section that I'm planning to write.
Yeah.
And researching ahead of time, doing all of that. Listen, you don't get into Cat Fancy magazine if you don't do that kind of work.
That's right. For sure.
And that is a thing that I think is one method mm-hmm. that we could be employing. And we will discuss spoilers. We're going to talk a little more about this because I'm going to give you an example of someone who doesn't do that and who writes fully stream of consciousness. Hmm. So that's another option.
Yeah.
And that is closer to how I have, you know, have written.
So said another way, just start writing.
Just start writing. Yeah. Just do the thing. But I think there is a place in between I could probably settle to.
Yeah.
Which is have something of a plan
mm-hmm.
and follow that plan.
Yeah.
And I think you would find there are writers that are successful that way too, that middle ground.
Yeah.
Except that when I tell you the stream of consciousness, the just start writing writer is Stephen King.
Yeah.
Then you might say, yeah. Well.
Yeah, maybe that works.
Maybe do that.
Yeah. So I don't want to disrupt your train of thought here, but right now when you write most of your stuff, I don't know what most means percentage wise or whatever, but.
Oh, I'm going to need a number.
I'm going to give me a number. I don't answer this question, Bauer. You are like somewhere in between, aren't you? Like you've got it, maybe not a plan written down or an outline, a formal outline or something, but you seem too like well thought out, well planned when we're just like idea sharing or when we leave idea sharing that mm-hmm. like it seems tough for me to think of you like writing a blank sheet all the time. Like,
right.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Is that where you're at? Is that where you're at?
Like
the somewhere in between?
But so my definition for me, somewhere in between, is I will know what it is. Like, I'll know my point.
Yeah.
Right? And if I know I want it to be a listicle, for example. So
Yeah.
You know how heavily I believe in, like, either the number four or the number three. I need three examples of this thing, yeah, or I need to have at least 4 points. Or I have to correspond it to a word and then make an acronym. Yeah. If I am going into something like that, I will know my main point, and then the first thing I will do is create the list, and then everything falls down around the list.
Sure.
But that, I mean, when you say planning, that is, it's akin to planning.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But it is, it really is still, in essence, starting from zero.
Yeah.
Right? And especially because the, when I'm thinking about a listicle, the, maybe I shouldn't say this out loud to you, as my boss. The headlines to that list don't, sometimes are just clever. Right?
Yeah.
They are not always, they don't always state what the thesis of the thing they are headlining is going to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So
I'm not shocked to hear that.
It's a little loosey, sometimes it's a little loosey-goosey.
Yeah.
And it can depend on just where my stream of consciousness has taken me. Like, I think I have not done enough really serious long writing to have a way in that is reliable, right? Mm-hmm. So I have probably, according to Grammarly, I've written over 6 million words in the last 3 years. But
humble brag.
Humble brag. But even having written over 6 million words in the last 3 years, there isn't a through line enough to all of those words. It's a chunk here and a chunk there, and yeah, you know,
right,
that the discipline of getting into it and, you know, having a reliable way to say, like, okay, if, you know, if I sit down and I have my pen here and my notepad there, and, you know, I have a because I have to have this chaotic tendency to have, I need a cup of coffee and a bottle of water, and if I can have, you know, I need all of these things. I don't have that habit to say, once I have this set, I am into,
yeah,
this thing, and have a reliable way to do it. So I do come at each different thing in sort of a different way almost every time.
Yeah.
Long answer.
Interesting. Yeah. No,
it's, yeah,
interesting. Yeah.
So I think I actually am learning some. I was talking to Simplicity CEO Nick Faber last week. And I can't remember why he said it, but he made some mention of how I come to every discussion so well prepared. And I'm starting to see that whatever crap I am putting out to you people is, like, you're buying this whole package. Because, yeah. Yeah. But back to the main point about knowing your stuff, like, it's in here.
Right. Yeah.
So
right.
What people perceive as an ability to have good preparation or to have a habit is really my brain's ability to recall and move things around quickly enough to do what I have to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Well, keep doing it. It serves you well.
Yeah. It's making me a paycheck.
And yeah. That's,
I'm buying that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So how do you write? What do you do?
Yeah, I am write. How do I write? Air quotes, write or whatever.
But you've written blogs. There's,
yeah,
no air quotes.
For sure, yeah. I need an outline. Like, I need...
Really?
I got to know where I'm going, for sure. Okay. I need to know the end of... I need to know the outcome or, like, the ending of the story or whatever. So, like, this whole, like, state of consciousness writing thing. I mean, I think I can do all of that while staying open to, like, plans changing throughout mm-hmm. the process or whatever. But, like, the idea of, like, starting to write a story without knowing if the main character lives or not, like, nah, no.
You wouldn't do that?
No. Huh. No. And I think I would, and that's, yeah. Yeah. I think so. Gosh, I don't know. You know, and I haven't done enough writing to really give a super confident answer here, but I need to know where I'm going. I think especially because writing isn't my strong suit. It's not something that I do so often that I can say, like, I'm really good at it or anything. But and what I'm questioning myself as I'm giving this answer, because I think about when I design something, I think I'm very comfortable starting with a blank palette and seeing, like, what comes of it, even though mm-hmm. I'm sure I have an idea or, you know, a quote unquote outline in my mind, right, as I'm designing. But I think when I do, you know, when it's graphic design or even building a website or something, I'm way more open to letting the final product be what it may kind mm-hmm. of thing, you know. But because I'm less confident and because I do it less often in my writing ability, I think I need that structure to keep me moving, mm-hmm. etc. So, yeah.
Well, and graphic design, it seems to me, has an innate structure to it. If you're designing something, it has to fit the spot where it needs to be. So already you have structure that mm-hmm. is imposed
yeah.
on what you're doing. And there is writing like that, you know.
Yeah.
So if you're writing for a blog, it's just it has to fit into that. It has to be the right style, mm-hmm. and it can't be 18 pages long. And but there is. It seems to me, and I could be completely wrong, not being a graphic designer, but it seems to me that there is so much more freedom, because if the ideal length of a blog were 500 words and I wrote 504, nobody's going to know.
Yeah.
But if the ideal size of a graphic design is 3 inches by 4 inches and you made it 4.5 inches,
yeah,
it would be right. noticeable.
Yeah. Well, and there's, you know, physical size to something that you're designing, but then I think there's also, like, size of creative idea or, you mm-hmm. know, ideas. So I think maybe the comparison there is if I'm designing something and I've got enough good ideas into the thing that I'm designing that I want to see more of them out in the world, then it might mean this singular design that I was creating turns into a series or something. And I think the mm-hmm. same thing with a blog, right? Like, you shoot to write for whatever length and style you feel is right. And if as you're writing, you're like, dang, there's, like, way more to say here, then it turns mm-hmm. into a series, you know? So I think there's similarities there that you have these limitations to stay within or these standards that maybe help scope something out for you. And in both worlds, you can stay open to what, mm-hmm. how it might go beyond that.
Yeah. Yeah. And also maybe we have hit on something that could be both a blessing and a curse, sort of a barrier as we're getting started here, which is a blog, for example, is a predictable length. Right? Mm-hmm. Even if you said, this is too long, now this is going to be a two-part or a three-part, whatever. It's still a predictable length. You know you can't go on forever, mm-hmm. right? And this isn't like that. This is, it needs to be, you know, back to that idea of it needs to be the length it needs to be to mm-hmm. do the thing.
Right.
And that not knowing what the length is to do the thing mm-hmm. can be, I don't know, it feels a little scary.
Yeah.
Maybe scary is not the right word.
Yeah.
Like daunting, because if there is one thing that I think my brain craves, it's certainty.
Yeah.
Right?
Sure.
So to have finally gotten, I'm finally at a point in my career and the things that I do professionally that I have a high level of certainty that I can do, that I know how to do the thing. I can do the thing without necessarily needing to be micromanaged.
Yeah.
I have a nice level of independence. Mm-hmm. But bringing together a project like a book, I need to micromanage that myself a little bit. Mm. It needs to be, it all needs to fit together. And I just don't have, I don't have the level of certainty, I think, that my brain craves.
It's interesting because I'm on the other side of it, and I actually think it's kind of freeing to not be certain about it. And like in this moment, like I think I'm totally comfortable that this thing might wind up being a, I don't know, something beyond a booklet that one might call a quick read or a manual. Or it could be something extensive and, you know, like hundreds of pages long, you know, mm-hmm. and might take a long time to get through. So, and yeah, and I'm comfortable with it being what it needs to be.
But, you know, that summarizes our relationship in, like, I don't think we've ever said two things that summarize exactly our relationship, at least in my experience,
yeah.
which is you are always the person.
I'm basking in the comfort of the situation.
Who is like, no, it's fine. It's, we can be flexible.
Yeah.
And I am the opposite, going, let's not, I am not flexible.
Yeah.
And we are not, how far do you want me to flex?
Yeah.
No, I cannot, yeah. my head will not bend over backwards like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So this is a nice little discovery and maybe something that we need to do to help move us forward is like, where can we compromise on that? So you get the at least a level of certainty that mm-hmm. is acceptable to you, and you're not, you know, constrained by what you don't know, and also might help me focus on mm-hmm. where we need to be if I know, like, this is what we're shooting for,
right?
Or whatever. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. And a thing that has been successful in me dealing with you, and I mean that in the nicest way possible, dealing with you. In the nicest way possible, in me dealing with your comfort with that, you know, almost infinite flexibility that I don't have.
Almost.
It is, yeah. It really has been, number one, I know I can trust you. And number two, I have learned what the outcome of that can look like, which is... low stakes is not the right way to describe it, but I know at this point in working with you that if you say, I'm comfortable with the way this turns out, no matter how it turns out, I trust you
mm-hmm.
in that. Yeah. And I can say, okay, well, if he's comfortable, I can come around to be comfortable with it. I'm never going to be totally comfortable with anything,
right.
And we might as well just deal with that. But
yeah.
I can at least say, like, we're not going to come to the end of this and have some, you know, opposite day where Ben's like, no, now I'm mad. Right? You've
right.
never, and hey man, it took me 7 years now to get to the point to be able to say out loud, I do trust you to
yeah.
that point.
Yeah.
Obviously that is not something I trusted you with early on when we were working together. I had to
right.
see. You know, I needed 7 years worth of proof.
7 years worth of proof, I get it.
Yeah,
yeah,
it's
yeah.
good. You're almost there.
Yeah, almost. Thank goodness.
So, okay. So let's transition and let's stop talking about all of my problems and I'll just get a therapist.
You're doing great.
We talked about different lengths and different ways people can write.
Mm-hmm.
And we challenged ourselves to bring some examples
mm-hmm.
of the different ways things come together.
Yep.
So.
And by some examples, you mean we were each supposed to bring one.
We were each supposed to bring one.
Yeah. Well, spoiler alert.
And look at what you did.
Let's talk about flexibility soon.
Yeah. 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 So why don't you start with one of your 75 different examples that you brought?
Yeah. All right, Miss Exaggeration. Mm-hmm. It was three.
Okay.
I'll just do one.
Yeah. I'm gonna do one.
I'm gonna do one.
Okay. I only have one.
Okay.
So, but you know me, I can go on for 6 hours about one thing. Yeah. So.
Okay. So I'll do my first. Well, I'll do. I'm gonna talk about Jurassic Park. So.
Oh, I'm so glad.
Michael Crichton. It took him 8 years to write Jurassic Park, which, mm-hmm. in the Marvel that it is no surprise, right? But we're going to, some of the others that we'll be sharing, we'll learn that there's others that are right on the other end of that spectrum. So, and 8 years was actually, if I'm remembering the article that I read correctly, 8 years was actually not his longest. Sphere, I think, was 20 years. So, yeah, 8 years feels like a long time. And this is from initial idea to publication of the book.
Right.
So, you know, who knows what happened along those 8 years? Well, I know who knows. He does, and he shares it on his website. So that's the link that we'll be sharing. So check that out. But yeah, I mean, 8 years to write a book. Holy smokes. That's how long that one took.
That's a long time.
It's a long time.
Give us another one.
Okay. So the Beatles and their album, Please Please Me. It took, oh gosh, I didn't even write it down. Terrible notes, but you can fact check me here. Mm-hmm. It was like 13 hours in the studio. It was like 10 songs and 4 bonus tracks. Like, jeez. From now, I didn't read the entire history of it. I don't know like how much lyric writing happened before the studio experience and the actual recording of it, but whatever, man. Like, mm-hmm. come into the studio to write or to record 10 songs and you've got all the lyrics and even a general idea of how it's supposed to sound, and the fact that less than one trip around the sun, right. or not around the sun, one trip of the earth spinning means you have an album, and not to mention, like, you know, arguably greatest band ever. Like, it's baffling.
Yeah.
Absolutely baffling to me.
Yeah. I think they are a great example, too, of, well, of a couple of things. Mm-hmm. Collaboration.
Yeah.
And a group, particularly when you talk about John Lennon and being, you know, really prolific with the poetry of what he wrote, and then Paul McCartney,
yeah.
And then being able to collaborate. But also an interesting story of how you put that in a pressure cooker.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And you have really 4 super talented people, mm-hmm. And it can implode.
Yeah.
In a pretty spectacular way.
Right.
And then shout out, happy birthday, Yoko Ono, 91.
For real?
Yeah, 91.
Like today?
No, like 3 days ago. But
okay. Jeez, I was going to say, that's a weird time.
Wouldn't that be funny, though?
Yeah,
that'd be
funny.
That would have been so cool. I should have lied to you. But the point is this. She ruined the Beatles. That's really my point here.
Got it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, I'm just going to do my third.
You might as well.
So the third one is the book, The Boy in the Striped Pajamas. And that was like a 36-hour bender.
Shut up right now.
Yeah. So started writing, I think on a Wednesday evening, if I remember right, and just went with it. Just like, this is very like state of consciousness, right? So just mm-hmm. started writing, was like 12 hours in-ish. Didn't stop to eat, didn't stop to drink other than coffee and such along the way. And in the article, you can read that like he kind of like reflects in the moment about how he like recognized, if I stop now, I'm gonna get out of this flow that I'm in, so like I'm just gonna keep going until I can't anymore. And when he wound up stopping was when it was done. Mm-hmm. And this was first draft, so again, you know, maybe a tiny bit out of context, like who knows what wound up happening in the editing process or how long that took, how much actually changed, but whatever, like first draft of a whole book, 36 hours, just like nonstop.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, mind-boggling. So the reason I brought three examples was because I couldn't decide music or book, and mm-hmm. then I couldn't decide, should I share an example that happened so quick, like the 36-hour first draft of a book or the 8 hours to write Jurassic Park. So, mm-hmm. so yeah, I just brought them all. So there you go.
That's fair.
Yeah.
That's fair.
Is it, though?
It. I mean, it's technically, so actually.
The rules here are very, very
You know loose. What? Our rules are very loosey-goosey yeah. anyway, but... it's just, to be fair, technically, the story that I wanted to talk about involves two authors, because one of the articles I found was George R.R. Martin, interviewing Stephen King, and one of the questions he asks him is, "How do you write so damn fast?" Hmm. And legendarily, and listen. This is more about my personal beef with George R.R. Martin right now, because I was reminded reading this article that I have been waiting for the last book in the Dance with Dragons series since 2011. That is a travesty.
So it's not that he has two middle initials.
It's not the R.R.R. Okay.
That's what I really thought you were mad about.
No, okay. It is the fact that... and. For a while, I would follow his blog.
Yeah.
And then it just became him writing, like, wow, I was watching the football game. Or just George.
Yeah.
Sit down.
I want to hear from you until you give me that book.
Yeah. Got yeah. It. So I've essentially, this is my announcement that I've given up thinking he's ever going to write that final book.
I hope he's listening. Look at what you've done.
I hope he feels
George.
Bad. You've broken me, George R.R. Martin. But so legendarily, George has not returned that book, which I need very badly. But in this interview with Stephen King, I just find it really funny. One of the questions he asked him is, how do you write so damn fast? Mm-hmm. Well, first of all, George, you write.
Yeah.
So Stephen King's process is that he works six days a week. And he writes about 4 to 6 hours a day, every day, 6 days a week, including holidays. And he can write a book in 3 months doing it that way. So not 36 hours, but in 3 months.
Yeah.
And then he sets that book down for 3 months, writes another book, sets that one down, comes back for the second draft on the one that's been waiting. And it took him with that process and everything else that he had to do. One of my favorite Stephen King books is The Stand. And that took, similar to Jurassic Park, it took 8 years for that to come out.
Sure. After all the cyclical reviews and stuff.
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
Right. Interesting. But that's why he can... That process, first of all, working 6 days a week,
right.
And it sounds like having a predictable amount of time. And by the time you're Stephen King, you literally have nothing else. You have all the money you need.
Yeah.
You don't have to worry about taking care of yourself. So you can focus on writing.
Yeah.
But I find him really interesting because he does write completely, maybe completely is too big of a word for you. But he does not do notes. He does not write down ideas. He starts a book. He gets the idea for a book, mm-hmm. and he starts at the beginning. And he just writes it.
Yeah.
And I think even saying all of that... He's an anomaly.
Yeah.
He's a machine. He's a monster. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
To be able to do that and be that as prolific as he is, and having been that prolific for as long as he has been.
Right.
In my in-depth analysis of what I learned from reading this, is I think it's the habit that, other than he's brilliant.
Yeah, right.
And he has a way of bringing characters to life, and he has, you know, at this point, perfected his craft.
Yeah.
The discipline.
Yeah, discipline is the word that's been rolling in my head this whole time. Yeah.
Seems to be the thing that gets him through.
Yeah. Unreal.
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't, clearly none of that wore off on George R. R. Martin.
Yeah, clearly.
Yeah. Have you considered writing, George?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's cool.
Yeah. So I don't want it to take 8 years.
Right.
I don't think it's going to take 36 hours.
Right.
Maybe when we're all done, it'll be 36 hours.
Yeah.
Just not all at one shot.
Right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah. Cool.
Okay. I feel
and
good.
Hey, whatever it winds up being, here we go, Mr. Flexible.
Yeah, yeah.
Whatever winds up being, it'll be.
Thanks, Mr. Flexible.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm very excited to see you in that new Fantastic Four movie. Yeah, right. Playing Pedro Pascal's brother, Mr. Flexible.
Dream job right there. That guy's cool.
He's the internet's daddy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So,
all right.
We hope that you have taken something from this. I have certainly taken some. I love to be able to have these conversations, especially honest conversations.
Right. Yeah. And it is part of the process, and this will help us write. It'll help us move forward. So,
yes.
That's why we're doing it.
And we trust the process.
Right.
That is universal.
For sure.
So, thank you for joining us again. Thank you for being on this journey with us. You can always learn more about what we're doing. If this is the first time you have listened to us, you can go back and listen to any number of our podcasts. But if you are interested in hearing what the heck we're talking about with this book, I would start in January of this year and start with that podcast. But this is our sixth season, as I like to remind everyone, strangers on the street, people in my family. This is our sixth season, so you have lots that you can listen to, and you can get to it at our website, exclamationcuso.com/blog.
Go check that stuff out. It's a quick listen to catch up on the book writing process. Thanks, Sue. Thanks, friends, for listening and tuning in. Be awesome. We'll see you next time.
The Awesomeology Podcast is a production of Exclamation Services. Thanks to Nick Mulliver for sound production and Kylie Ganther for our cover artwork.
Executive producers are me, Ben Bauer, and my friend, Suzanne Campbell.